Welcome to SILRAP Podcasts. You are about to listen to a service of the Center for International Law Research and Policy.
Good morning. Thank you for the invitation. It's a true pleasure to be here. And I will attempt in 15 minutes to provide a preview of my topic. The International Criminal Court seems to be going through an identity crisis. Preliminary examinations, the procedural step taken prior to determining whether or not to open an investigation, have become one of the court's principal and most notorious activities. It is generally accepted that preliminary examinations produce effects of their own and that they have had unforeseen successes. In fact, the OTP started noticing early on that preliminary examinations could have an impact even before a decision to investigate was reached, while also creating pressure for national judicial proceedings. And yes, the court cannot do everything, so there is some merit in trying to extract as much preventive or deterrent value from preliminary examinations through publicity. However, purposefully using preliminary examinations for in a different manner to that intended in the Rome Statute can run counter to the general interest of the ICC as a whole. Given the prosecutor's use of publicity with regard to preliminary examinations, it would appear that the first step in prosecutorial activity is not about applying a standard anymore, reasonable basis standard, but about applying pressure. A couple of comments on publicity. The first is that problems surrounding the publicity of preliminary examinations mainly arise when the prosecutor acts proprio motu, which will be the focus of my remarks. And this is because referrals from states or the Security Council, they are normally made public, they are announced immediately, they go through a fast-track process and do not require authorization. Second, the publicity of preliminary examination activities was not addressed in Rome. It could not have been understood in 1998 that a preliminary examination list would go on the ICC website before making a determination of whether there was a reasonable basis to proceed or seeking authorization from the pretrial chamber. Publicity is still not well regulated and is essentially selective. Third, what determines a preliminary examination's official status is publicity. This becomes official once its existence is announced to the general public after phase two. And in the meantime, there seem to be monitoring activities that precede the public announcement, suggesting an additional secret list of situations exists whereby the OTP conducts a preliminary examination. With respect to reasons for publicizing, as you are aware, the OTP has produced reports on preliminary examination activities, stating that their purpose is to promote transparency and raise awareness. But what does transparency mean in the world of preliminary examinations? It cannot just be another buzzword to attract support or gain legitimacy. For it to have a real impact, it must be meaningful, exemplifying communication, accountability, and aiming at giving the office long-term coherence in order for it to be truly predictable and credible. Unfortunately, reporting preliminary examination activities has not necessarily led to more transparency. It is still unclear why some situations move more quickly and others stagnate for years. It is also unclear why the office conducts regular missions to some countries, but not to others. Something that has come up in several panels, last year the OTP reported that a final decision was imminent on whether to request authorization to investigate in the situation in Afghanistan. Well, nothing has been forthcoming to date. And it will be interesting to see what the OTP will say in its 2017 report. Perhaps that a decision is absolutely imminent? Will anyone believe that? Or is the OTP condemned to suffer the same fate as the boy who cried wolf? Similarly, publicizing something before the right time can do more harm than good. For example, under phase two situations where subject matter jurisdiction is still being examined, does it serve any purpose to publicize the examination of activities that may not even end up constituting Rome Statute crimes, such as with Iraq and where UK has been carrying out judicial proceedings? There are also risks associated with making legal qualifications at an early stage, like what we saw with Ukraine and the reaction of Russia. In relation to raising awareness, while the OTP has a mandate relating to public information and outreach, it is arguably exceeding this mandate by making several early warning statements or threatening ones. This is related to the OTP's policy objectives of deterrence and prevention, but is the prosecutor assuming roles that are more suitable for states, for civil society, or for the High Commissioner of Human Rights? And in this regard, I would recall the OTP's 2016-2018 strategic plan, in which it offered to further develop criteria for guiding preventive activities related to preliminary examinations. Having a methodology is indeed necessary. Otherwise, the OTP should only accord deterrent effects secondary attention. An informal process intended to be preliminary that goes on for an extended period runs contrary to any possible deterrent effects. No matter how powerful the effect of the ICC threat, it is likely to diminish over time and to become quite toothless if this process is perceived as not leading to any palpable outcome. Again, the court who cried wolf. Protracted preliminary examinations can even contribute to perpetuating crimes or promoting impunity. Indeed, some states are complacent with the status quo of preliminary examinations, viewing them as shields from ICC investigations. For justice to have an impact, it must follow its own rules. If the ICC is contemplated simply as a lever, it will be undermined, as some will expect it to be turned on and off as political circumstances dictate. In the same vein, focusing preliminary examinations on positive complementarity is counterproductive. That is because it is difficult to establish causality. Impact and the reform of systems take time and are therefore at odds with preliminary examinations, which are meant to be short-term means for determining or not whether to open an investigation. It is also disingenuous that the pace of local developments should determine the pace of ICC processes, because even the most advanced societies and legal systems in the world are not fully equipped to deal with Rome Statute crimes. Rather than undertaking tasks that not all state parties agree the OTP should be doing, the prosecutor should simply make more use of Article 18. A notification under this article can carry a much more potent message without playing out interactions in the public and is consistent with states' primacy to carry out their own proceedings. The OTP policy paper undermines this article by treating preliminary examinations stemming from Article 15 communications differently, in the fact that it, before requesting authorization to the pretrial chamber, it will inform relevant states with jurisdiction of its determination and inquire whether they wish to refer the situation to the court. Now, if the OTP is serious about seeking to stimulate credible national proceedings, it should avoid imposing on states the referral of the situation. Following Article 18 can obviate the need for ICC intervention. It can foster transparency, credibility, and cooperation with governments if they do not, as long as they do not feel as being pointed at or shamed. Moving on to withdrawals, if we take a look at the Burundi situation, it's very interesting to assess because gauging the consequences of publicizing a preliminary examination are relevant to the extent that maybe the possibility of this announcement contributed to some extent to Burundi's withdrawal. And also because now it is this withdrawal that appears to be the basis for the OTP's consideration to proceed with an investigation. Burundian authorities have raised several arguments with regard to to withdrawal, mostly related to complementarity. They have explained that there was no policy or process established by the ICC regarding the verification of the actual fulfillment of the right of complementarity. What they call, and I quote, an inescapable stage before any publicized intervention of a preliminary examination. Burundi has also pointed to the fact that the report didn't really go into detail regarding the complementarity steps that Burundi had taken. And in that report, the OTP indicated that, yes, it had received some relevant reports from investigative committees set up by the Burundian prosecutor, and that in terms of next steps, it may also gather available information on relevant national proceedings at this stage of analysis, phase two. Now it appears that despite this stated need for further analysis, the OTP might decide to politically move forward with an investigation. And if that is the case, a withdrawal should not be the reason for doing so, especially because when this kicks in, it is likely to affect cooperation and enforcement, even if that means that the OTP's mishandling of this preliminary examination will now send the erroneous signal to states parties whose leaders might be defendants that they can avoid the ICC by withdrawing from the Rome Statute. And before concluding, I would like to share some practical recommendations on how to improve and enhance the quality of preliminary examinations related to publicity. The first is to set out a communication strategy. It's important to develop methodology adaptable to each situation to avoid reactions or pressures from the media. It's important to manage expectations. It's important to keep all actors involved in the process fully informed from start to finish. A more discreet approach should be adopted, limiting the provision of information to that which is factual. The OTP should only make Article 53 reports public and insist on confidentiality until it is ready to take a decision. Second, improve the quality of reporting. There should be clarity on the cycling of reports, and also an avoidance of duplications and inconsistencies. And here I would highlight that there is the annual report on preliminary examination activities of the OTP, but there is also an annual activities report of the court. Well, it turns out that there, on the exact same situations, there is information that is not only overlapping, but that is also contradictory. And in any case, I believe that one report suffice, and it could be the annual activities report of the court. And with regard to the content, there's not much that you need to say on preliminary examinations, as at that point, all findings are inconclusive. Therefore, what's relevant is statistics on Article 15 communications overall by year, also the types of alleged crimes that are arising and what regions they cover, how many of the communications are manifestly outside of jurisdiction. And for those preliminary examinations that are already public, it would also be relevant and useful to know where and with what frequency missions are conducted. Third, harmonized terminology. The linkage of preliminary examinations and investigations is a confusion of two processes that may seem similar but are essentially different. And as much as the OTP has tried to keep this different, they are also responsible for the confusion. The first step, which is compulsory, routine, is a preliminary examination. And then the prosecutor decides whether or not to open an investigation. And that's why it's improper to say to the world, I have decided to open a preliminary examination. And the same goes for other terms that I will not go into right now, such as the closing, the reopening, the completion, the termination, the reconsideration, and you'll find that in my paper. Fourth, consider alternative ways to build trust. Although the field of criminal law investigations is unique, the OTP can benefit from looking at established working methods and dynamics of monitoring, reporting, and fact-finding mechanisms, as well as the confidentiality approach taken by the ICRC. Notable research has been carried out relating to how, when, and to what extent these mechanisms that are dealing with violations of human rights and of IHL should engage in public communications. And finally, publicizing does have its consequences. But let us remember that what you do is more significant than what you say. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you for listening. For more open access audio recordings, films, and publications, go to silrap.org.